You are listening to The Overwhelmed Brain. Today's episode is brought to you by GetOutOfTheMess.com. Quality attorneys at established law firms for about, $20 a month.
Those prices are insane!
Are you annoyed by affirmations? Are you tired of that same old, rehashed personal growth advice that all seems to boil down to, think positively and all your problems will go away? If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking feels like denial, then I want you to get ready. The Overwhelmed Brain is here to help you create the life you want now. Welcome to The Overwhelmed Brain. I am your host, personal empowerment coach, Paul Coliani. I am here to help you increase your emotional intelligence, strengthen your self-worth and self-esteem, and empower you so that you can make decisions that are right for you. Everything on this show, everything that me or my guest talks about, is our personal opinion and is meant for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult your physician or therapist or psychiatrist or any of the number of people that you go and see and pay a lot of money to before making any changes to your medical treatment. With that, this is another special midweek episode. I have invited back Matthew Bivens. I like to call him like an online mentor, a virtual coach. I don't know what title he uses, but he does the show Having It All with Matthew Bivens. He also does the podcast, Doing It at Home, which is about home birthing. You can find him at MatthewBivens.com and on iTunes if you look up the podcast. So Matthew, welcome to the show, and did I get that right?
Hey, what's up, Paul? You nailed it.
Great.
Got it.
Great. Thank you for joining me again.
Absolutely.
It's great to have you here. One of the reasons that I like having you here and your perspective, and I said this last week, is that your perspective's different than mine. I don't know if I said that, but I said that I really enjoy having a different perspective. I said that in like the intro or the outro of the last episode we did. I said, I really enjoy having someone who has a different brain than me because I have one perspective, and my perspective is, you know, from my clients, from who I've talked to, from my own learnings throughout life, from my own dysfunction throughout life, from my own healing and emotional growth throughout life. And, I like I've said in many episodes, it doesn't mean I have all the answers. It just means I have a perspective. It means I have my own insights. I have some wisdom that I've gained about my own life that seems to help others. And Matthew and, you know, millions and billions of everyone out there, basically everyone out there, has the same thing. And some of us specialize in areas of life that others don't. I don't suggest you come to me to learn how to program in Java or HTML. I don't suggest you do it. But I suggest you go to the right people for the right stuff that you want to learn about. So this is where I think Matthew excels, where I have learned to focus my time and energy on, is personal growth, is self-help, is wanting to just expand myself, expand my mind, and grow into the best person I can possibly be. Because like one of the things that I like to teach is that when you get into a relationship, for example, always bring the best version of yourself into that relationship so that when you get there and you find someone else who hopefully is doing the same thing, trying to bring the best version of themselves into the relationship, then you can walk hand in hand on not only an independently personal growth path, but also co-independently personal growth past walking hand in hand. Doesn't mean you have to get into a romantic relationship. It just means that, you know, the world, the universe, whatever, is all about relationships, how we relate to one another. And that's what I like to do in this show, is help you relate to other people. And I think Matthew, you probably have a similar perspective than that. You would probably never say it the way I just did. But I can imagine that much of your, what I'm going to call online coaching on your show, is about helping people relate in some way, even to themselves. Would you agree or disagree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I talk a lot about relationships. on my show. And I view those relationships as relationship, like you said, to self, relationship to other people, and relationship to life. Right. And you know, and for me, I have spent, I've been very intentional over the past 5 years or so, looking at the areas in my life where I've been playing small and examining what's up with that. You know, what's up with that? Where does my lack of confidence in certain areas come from? You know, why am I so afraid of doing, you know, X, Y, and Z thing? And I have really made it a point to try and surround myself with people who can help me to see my blind spots and give me that raw and honest feedback. But then also just find somewhere within me the courage to move through some of those very scary, in the past it would be paralyzing situations. And so the Having It All podcast is a lot about that. It's a lot about the things that I'm learning through practice and through experience. It's about the failures that I'm having, the triumphs that I'm having, the breakdowns and the breakthroughs. And then it's also me, you know, sharing those experiences, but sharing the lessons and insight that I'm receiving from people like yourself. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say the last conversation we had when, you know, I came on your show and we talked about a listener email, you said something that I went and put into practice immediately after that and saw a huge impact. You talked about how in your life with your relationships, you wanted to come to the table and be the best lover that you possibly could. And you put it so plainly and simply, the best lover that you possibly can be. And so that kind of stuck with me. And, you know, it spoke to me with where I was at, you know, at the time. And so, I mean, that was last week. And since then, I have felt myself being more intentional to love on my wife and to speak her love languages. And in the moments when I might, you know, respond with some feedback or try to solve a problem for her, I found myself just listening and asking, well, what else? How else did you feel? Or, you know, asking her to share more. And I really appreciate you not only inviting me on this show, because this is an awesome opportunity and I love sharpening my saw in these conversations, but I appreciate you sharing your experiences and sharing the things that you've learned, because, you know, here I am taking those lessons and really learning from what you've experienced and applying them. And I will admit, yesterday my wife and I did have a funky patch, and I did not exercise being the best lover that I could be. And I totally will take the responsibility for really creating the funk. And so now after this call, it's a beautiful snowy day here in Atlanta, and after we're complete, I'm going to get back onto the loving my life, my wife path. And so, yeah, I appreciate you, Paul. Thank you.
Wow. Thank you for that. And I'm so glad that you're humble enough to go, you know what? I learned something from our last conversation, because that's exactly where I try to be. I'm not saying I'm always successful, but I try to be at all times, to be with other people where I can go, that's very insightful. I would love to be able to apply that. I'm going to apply that and see what happens. So, you know, that's one of the reasons I reach out to you, and we could go on and I could compliment you and say, I love having you on the show, because it's true. It's true. But, I do appreciate all your words. And, one of the things I want to talk about today is a letter that we received that relates to relationships. And you know what? Most of the emails that I receive relate to relationships, because like I said, that's what we do. We were born into families where then we go into jobs that typically relate to other people in some way because we serve them or service are oriented and such like that. So this letter, I'm just going to go ahead and read it. I've sent a copy over to you, Matthew, so you can take some notes on it and then we can comment on it. And again, if you're like a first time listener or pretty new to this show, this is an unusual path to take for this show, because I typically don't have another person on to talk about this stuff. So this is why it's kind of in the midweek section of the release schedule, to find out if this is going to be something that will continue, if it's helpful to you as a listener, and it's valuable to the people that write to get these perspectives. So The regular show comes out every Sunday, but you know, this is pre-recorded. You can listen to it anytime you want. So you have no idea when this comes out if you're doing that. I'll probably just delete that entire thing I just said, but it doesn't matter. Probably leave it in. So I'm going to read this email that is from someone I'm going to call Mary, and I changed some of the details or a lot of the details so that we can protect Mary's privacy. And Mary says, I was listening to the 831 show. What was that? 8 is August? Yeah.
Yeah.
About how one electronic message can change your life. I wanted to share a bit of my story. And just to tell everyone what that's about, I was talking about how email, your online presence, your Facebook, your social media can really, I mean, that's out there forever. Even an email that you send to someone privately is still online forever in some way, shape, or form. Even if it gets deleted because someone could save it, and then we're going to find out in this email that I'm reading, forward it to someone else, and then it becomes a problem because now your privacy has been violated. And that's what I was talking about on that particular episode. So she says, I want to share a bit of my story. I emailed my husband about an ongoing issue in our marriage. I chose email because he often blows up quickly at any conversation that seems negative to him. He'd rather not talk. Let's see. Because I wanted to discuss, hash out, and problem solve, I often choose to email him. That way, he knows he has to hear me out. Among other things, it was concerning his sister's lack of interest in anything about us, our kids, etc. We'd been married at that time for several years, and she didn't even know where I worked. I was prompted to write the email because he said I hadn't done anything for his sister to show concern during a challenge that she was having. But I actually had. No, I didn't do a lot, but I did send her a card and gift. I felt that was all about she'd want me to do because she'd chosen not to share any of this situation with me. In the same email to my husband, I also explained that although his family bought my kids and I great gifts, the gift of true interest in us and time with us would be much better. Later, I found out, that my husband forwarded the email to someone in his immediate family. Like I said, I'm keeping certain details out. Since then, certain members of his family treat me like I have the plague. All birthday gifts to me or my kids have ceased. They've shut out my stepdaughter for continuing a relationship with me. They've scheduled events on days that I invited people over so that those people could go to their events and not mine. I have been shocked by some of her behavior. I don't know what they say to my husband behind my back because I haven't visited them in such a long time, though he constantly defends their anger toward me. It's almost completely severed our marriage. He has a divided mind and I do not trust him anymore. They want me to take my words back and say I didn't mean it, but I did. I told them I was sorry it hurt their feelings, but it is the way I felt, and I thought my feelings between my husband and me were confidential. They do not see it that way. I invited the family member that he shared the email with to our counseling session, and the counselor could not get her to understand the broken privacy of our marriage. He felt that if I started apologizing for what was not supposed to be known by them, I'd be digging a deeper hole, essentially inviting their approval or disapproval into every area of my marriage. If you address this, please let me know. I'd love to know your thoughts. Thanks. So yes, thank you. What did I call you? Mary. Thank you so much for sharing that, Mary. That is a challenge because here you are with full faith and trust in your husband that you could share anything and be in this safe place. And suddenly that trust is violated. It's like, you know, one of the notes I wrote, bullet points here is that when we get home from something that happened to us, or we want to share something that happened to us with someone else, we typically can talk about someone else. And we could talk about our best friend. I could talk about what Matthew did to me. And, you know, I went to lunch with Matthew and I don't think he realized that I bought his lunch and he didn't even say thank you. So I might have this anger that comes up that might be fleeting and go, he probably didn't mean it, but what an I just swore on my own show. What a jerk. So these are the things that we say. We go home and we feel the safety and trust in our own nest that we can share with someone we feel safe and trust around. And suddenly it goes out into the general public and everyone hears it. So I'm here to say that we all, I'm going to just make the assumption that we all do this to a certain extent, that we talk about other people and other things that we believe are private. We get them out of our system, and then we don't necessarily feel that way in a permanent basis toward these other people. We just have these moments. So unfortunately, you put those moments in an email, which made them last forever, which these could be just quick expressions of anger or upset that you put in an email and just want to talk about. But suddenly now that's who you are and that's how you're defined. So I'm just saying this as a matter of, we all do this. It's not a place that you necessarily are alone in. It's just something that we all do, but putting it on a stone tablet kind of makes it last forever. So that's just good to know. So Matthew, do you have any first thoughts about this yourself?
My first thought was, whew, I have experienced some challenges within my own family very recently that were brought up when I read this. And so my first thought was, Mary, I feel for you. What you're going through with, you know, your husband and the family members does not sound like a lot of fun. And if it was anything like what I experienced, it's one of those things that really weighs on you. It seems to follow you around until some resolution happens or something shifts or moves or changes. It's just this cloud that's always there. So that was the first thing that came up for me. There were a few big, broad items that I thought of when I read it. I actually didn't even think of what you had just said, Paul, with, you know, essentially be careful what you put out there, you know, what you write down, what you share with others, because it might get shared. It might get passed around. That totally escaped me. So I'm happy that you picked up on that. And I guess it makes sense because she referred to your previous episode where you talked about that concept, that truth, that anything that you write, you know, anything that you record, is it's out there, and it's out there forever.
Yeah.
But the big things that came up for me, first of all, was Mary seemed to be playing the games that her in-laws were far superior at, far more skilled at. And Mary was as having frustrations because, you know, she's playing these games with them of who the husband is closer to and who he trusts. And, you know, she talked about him having a divided mind and, you know, well, I can't say these things about you and this stuff with the kids and you didn't come to my event, but they went to your event. And just sort of playing those games that it sounds like, you know, they've got more experience, they've got more skill in that area. And so it sounded like she was participating in a losing situation. That was one of the first things that came up. Another thing that came up was the husband's attachment to his blood family. And, you know, that was an interesting thing. And it made me think about what our centers are, family centeredness, spouse centeredness, you know, things like that. It made me think about the responsibilities that we commit to with our different family members. And in this case, it did not seem as if her husband was living up to the responsibility of the marriage in the scenario that she outlined. And then the last thing that I thought about, which is I think probably the biggest one for me, is I wanted to ask Mary, you know, what's your line in the sand? At what point do you say that you've had enough dealing with the in-laws and dealing with all of that energy? At what point do you say, listen, I'm not interested in having that around? It doesn't matter who it is. It doesn't matter if it is family, because it pulls away from, you know, it saps me of energy. It saps me of joy. It saps my health. And at some point it's like, what's your line in the sand? So those are the three things that I thought of.
Yeah. And all of those points, I just want to dive into and rip apart right now. But I want to go through this methodically, because especially one of the things that you mentioned, which I have on my list as well, which is the responsibility of a person in a relationship. The responsibility and the priorities they take, and who are they prioritizing over the relationship. And I have a strong opinion about that, and we'll talk about that in a moment. So I'm going to go into kind of sequentially down this email and mention some things and we could talk about it. Like one of the things that we talked about, yes, everything that you put out online in an email can be used against you and will be out there forever. And also, very, very important, defines you to a lot of people. If you write to someone and say, I am so mad at Bill for what he did, then from that point on, you are that person who is mad at Bill. Anyone who sees that message, you are the person who is mad at Bill. Oh, Mary's always mad at Bill. That's what they're going to do. They're going to generalize who you are because all they see is in a static message. And that static message defines you. And I think that's very important. And to just be aware of that when you're writing. I'm not saying you have to change who you write to and who you trust. It's just you might want to change how you write things. Like at this moment, I'm mad at him. I'm hoping I can come to some closure. That might lead into something else. You don't have to think about this too much, but just be aware that what she's going through is real. You could send it to someone that you trust. I mean, I remember, here's a quick story. I remember when I was working in the 90s at this alarm company, and we just learned about instant messaging through computer to computer. So we had these old computers, the giant monitors and everything, and they installed this internal messaging system. And, you know, you can choose names. And so we were all having fun. It was like the first time we could ever instant message anyone. It was like, we're going to get a lot of work done. So the problem was that some people were still learning how to use the system and didn't understand what select all meant. So what would they do? They would write a personal message.
Oh boy.
To Becky and just hit select all, not knowing what it did or not understanding the system. And everyone got the message to Becky. So that is very dangerous. There are stories that I could probably remember and cite from that, but there's a great example. How many times have you sent an email out and, oh, crap, it was to the wrong person. Oh, crap, how do I unsend?
That happened to me recently. I sent an email to a client, and they had the same first initials as somebody else. And I realized after I sent it, I was like, oh, whoops, I sent it to the wrong person. And then I had that quick second of, what did I say in that email?
Yes.
Did I say anything that I didn't, you know, want a different person to read?
Yes.
But luckily, no, it was just a very neutral email. But I've had that, and same with text messaging. I've thought, oh crap, was this a group thread that I said something on? And so, you know, you're right. You just want to be aware. Just be aware that your words, who might see them, who might read them, and if there's a little voice in your head that's like, eh, maybe I shouldn't, then you might want to adjust a few things with your message.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, I can find my history way back online, back into the, I don't know, late 90s, and see things that I wrote that long ago. And some of the stuff like, hey, first blog article, I'm going to talk about bathrooms and toiletry. And I'm like, I read that now, I'm like, this is ridiculous. I don't want this online. I don't want this representing me. So it was just silly things that I was writing and trying to figure out how to use the system. But yes, so that, you know, that makes sense. So the next thing is, I mean, everyone knows that what you put out there, but what people don't often realize is that you can send it to someone you trust and love, and they can accidentally forward it to someone else because there's a certain amount of information in there that they want to share with somebody else. Uh-huh. Yet they forget that you wrote all this other stuff about how angry you are with someone else or something. So,
when I read that in the listener email, I thought that was kind of interesting. And it made me think about what that relationship dynamic between, like I said, the husband and his blood family versus, well, not versus, but along with the husband and the wife. And I think I would probably feel similarly to Mary.
Yeah.
If I had sent an email to my spouse or a message and then verbatim that thing was copied and sent over to the individual or individuals to which I was addressing in the email, you know, talking about the situation.
Totally.
I get that. I get that.
Yep. So I'm going to go to the next point here, which is you said that he often blows up quickly at any conversation that seems negative to him. And I think that's a vital point to make on the subject of communication and relationship, because when someone blows up when you talk to them about subjects that seem negative. That can often be stonewalling. If you're not familiar with stonewalling, it's when you put the wall up and you don't want to talk about it. You just shut them out. When you shut someone out, it's because I don't want to deal with real stuff. I don't want to deal with real emotions. I don't want to feel these emotions, so I'm going to shut you out. Or I could even be on the side of, I want to stay right about everything in my life, not hear any opposing viewpoints, so I'm going to shut you out. That's already a problem. Before we even talk about you putting all your thoughts in an email, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying that if the communication is to that point where you can't even discuss a problem with your spouse or your significant other, then you have a problem. There's a problem that needs to be addressed.
Yeah, I thought that as well. And then at the end of the email, Mary goes on to say that they have a counselor. And so I thought that was great for them because, you know, if the relationships got to that point where a potential blow up, it's like, yeah, let me put this in an email. You know, I think it is great to have that person come in, that professional come in to really help and untie some of the knots that might be going on.
Great. And that's a good point. And also with emailing, we're talking about communication and trying to get all of the details out. Like, I don't want to be stonewalled. I don't want to be interrupted. I don't want him to blow up so I can't finish my sentence. There's a disadvantage to emailing someone your true thoughts and emotions. And the disadvantage is that during a real face-to-face conversation, when you're in each other's energy, you will often connect to core level stuff. You will often connect with that core level of emotions and those thoughts, and they will come out because what's happening is interactive triggering. You just triggered something in me and it's coming up. I'm going to talk about it. Whereas if you take the time to write an email and really filter out your thoughts and say exactly how you want to say it, the core might not be coming out. It might not be conveyed and the message may not get across. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying it's something to consider. Now, the only difference in writing things out is when you do it for yourself, like journaling. There's a big difference between writing to someone else saying, this is how I feel, and writing in a journal or to yourself and saying, oh, I was so pissed off at blah, blah, blah. And you're just writing it because this is streams of thought and emotion really connected to the core. I just wanted to kind of add that too.
Yeah. And I agree with that. I think emailing a spouse or whoever it is that you're going through some sort of challenge with, as long as that's not your primary mode of communication, you know, I think if you do that once, rarely, it's just a way for you to collect your thoughts, put them down and deliver them. And then maybe you have a follow up conversation on it. You know, that could be a powerful way to go about it. But I totally agree with what you said, Paul.
I have this, I've talked with people who made that their primary way to communicate. Emailing back and forth, texting back and forth. And that's
fascinating.
It is. It's great and all. And if it works for that, for those people, that's great too. I mean, maybe some people trigger each other in different ways and they set each other off and that's the way you're going to do it. That's the way it might have to happen. But I do recommend that if you can't get the hardest stuff out in person, that you probably will never get past the hardest stuff. So just kind of keep that in mind as well.
Yeah, you could say that again. Wow. I like that.
I'll replay it as a little soundbite.
Well, there's something too, just a face-to-face, voice-to-voice conversation, you know, and you have opportunity to empathize. I guess it could go either way. You know, maybe that person, like you said, triggers you and boom, all the stuff comes out. But at the same time, you have the opportunity to really see where that person's coming from. And I just think that it can be more effective long term to be able to have those types of conversations.
Totally.
If you can.
Totally. Yep. Something else that she said was, I felt that this was all she wanted me to do because she hadn't chosen to share. So she's talking about this other person that, you know, I didn't want to, you know, send her anything or write her to, you know, say anything to her. And she's not sharing her life with me. It's been a few years. She hasn't really reached out to me, this other person on her husband's side. And, you know, my thought about that is when someone is not reaching out to you, not sharing things with you, doesn't seem to be an active participant in your life, then reaching out to them and sharing with them, you know, when someone doesn't seem to want to be with you or share with you, you know, I could go either way with this. I could go, okay, she's having a hard time. Let me show my support for her, which is fine. But at the same time, do they really want to hear from you?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's challenging. So that's just something you assess on a case by case, person by person basis. But I think it comes down to who am I? You know, I'm not going to dictate my behavior because someone won't share with me. If I really feel, and this is where I go with it, if I really feel genuinely bad or sorry or I have sympathy for this person, then I'm going to say something because that's who I am. Instead of dictating, well, I'm not going to say anything because they never shared with me. I think it just needs to be more genuine inside of you.
I like that you said that because I had a similar situation, and you know, Mary, perhaps you can relate. I had a family member who was, you know, we were on opposite sides of an issue, opposite sides of a situation. It had to do with a fight that occurred in my family, and so we saw it different ways. We saw the way to approach it and quote unquote solve it. We just saw it differently. So my sister eventually went on, and she didn't want to talk to me. So she told me point blank that she didn't want to talk to me, that she needed to take a break essentially from having me in her life. And so I sat with that, and that was very, very hard for me. That's never happened with me to my siblings, for someone to say they didn't want me in their life and they couldn't speak to me. It was very challenging, and I wrestled with that for a number of months. And then I got to a place where, Paul, like what you said, like, how do I genuinely feel? Regardless of how they're showing up, how do I feel? How would I, in this case, love on my sister, regardless of what's going on? And so I started to show her love in small ways. I would, you know, include her on a family text when I'm sending a picture of my daughter, or I would comment on a photo that she posted on Facebook, or I would just send a check-in, hey, thinking about you today, blah, blah, blah. And that went on for a couple of weeks. It eventually got to a point where my sister, after I sent one of those little text messages, she immediately replied and said, listen, I don't want you to reach out to me. We have issues that haven't been addressed. I'm not going to beat around the bush and pretend that this stuff isn't going on. Wow. So if you want to address this, we can continue to move forward.
Wow.
So I say all that. Yeah, I say all that because with Mary being in this place of reaching out to the person who is obviously not wanting that sort of interaction right now. And even if it comes from a place of you genuinely wanting this individual in your life, and you're doing the thing, you're loving on them in the way that you want to be loved on, who knows what's going on with them? You know, who knows? Because in my case, it blew back and, you know, it was like, wait a minute, okay, let's address this issue. Thankfully for me, my sister was willing to go in and address the issue, and it got cleaned up, and we're cool now. It doesn't necessarily sound like that's the case with Mary. Yeah. It doesn't necessarily sound like the family who's been turning her back on Mary and her family. It doesn't really sound like they're interested in a different experience.
Mm.
And it's just, I found that very hard. Like when somebody's not interested in experiencing something different in their life, I mean, what can you do to influence that? You can try to force them to, but in this case, Mary, the other family members, like, that's what they want to experience.
Yeah. Your comment is golden because I really thought it was actually going to lead to a happy ending. We were like, okay, I'm going to say, hey, that was a great comment. Hey, and you just keep reaching out in little ways. And then you're like, it blew up in my face. You said, look, we have issues between us. We need to deal with these issues, which is a very mentally healthy thing for her to do. For her,
yes, I'm happy. She's always been like that. So my sister's great at, she's like, I can't go forward. We got to clean this up. And so I appreciate that, you know, from her.
That's lovely. I'm just so glad to hear that's how it went down, because that lesson that you just taught everyone here is that when there is a big issue and that dark cloud is over and both people or more people know about it, if that issue isn't resolved, everything else feels like fluff. Everything else feels like I'm just going to just poke you a little bit and say, no, I support you and I'm happy for you. Yeah, this big issue is, overriding. So that's just a great point, and I'm glad you shared that story. Thank you, Matthew.
You're welcome, and I'll be honest, that was a lesson that I learned because I was okay with just moving on. I'm like, hey, listen, let's just say, hey, the past is the past and let's move on. But I realized that there were things that needed to come out, and I realized that I was still holding on to my disempowering stories about her. It goes to my third point. Like, what's your line in the sand? How much are you interested in experiencing for yourself? Because they want to continue to experience the things not going well and the back and forth. And, it sounds like they're okay with planning events around your events and sort of the backhanded, all that stuff. It sounds like that's what they want to experience. And no matter what you do, I'd probably bet they're going to continue going down that path. They're going to continue that pattern. So for you, Mary, like, what do you want to experience? What do you want to experience with your relationship towards them, with your relationship with your husband, with the relationship that you have with yourself? Because I think that there is a line in the sand moment.
Well, let me highlight something that I believe is the nail in the coffin. I think the huge breach of trust that her husband presented into this relationship by sharing her private thoughts with anyone else. That to me, I picture myself in that situation and go, what did you do?
Yeah.
You shared my personal thoughts about those people. That is a huge violation of trust. And you know what? I have these high level values in my relationship that say trust is near the top, if not the top. Trust, honesty, integrity, all of that is at the top. And if I can't have those in the relationship, and the first thing you, or not the first thing, but what you do is violate one of my top values, guess what's going to happen to the relationship? It's going to crumble.
Uh-huh.
And I will not be able to function as highly as I've been able to function if I choose to stay in the relationship, because now I know there's a breach of trust and I cannot go forward with this feeling of safety and security, feeling good that I can tell you anything, because now I can't. And now, unless your husband comes back and says, I realized what I did. Holy cow, I'm so sorry. If that kind of attitude and behavior comes back and he says, I'm so sorry, I realized what I did, I'll never do that again, then I believe there's a good chance at resolving some of this stuff. If that never comes back and he just goes, well, tough, that's not my fault. And one of the things that you said that we should talk about is he's defending their anger toward you.
Yeah, I'm looking at that, or I'm remembering that portion. I think she said that she does not trust him, husband.
No.
And, just like you said, when that's going on, it's hard to, maybe impossible to really move things forward without that trust. That's a huge violation.
Yep. And when you can't get past that, it's that dark cloud that we were talking about. It's hovering over you. So now every other communication that you have with him, every little moment of intimacy, every little thing that you share now has this dark cloud. I can't trust him because of this. So if you can't fulfill that trust component of the relationship starts to diminish. You hold it in, it festers inside of you. And if he doesn't empathize, sympathize, have enough compassion for you, for the relationship, and he doesn't come back and say, I realized I made a mistake, because he did. All of this stemmed from your husband sharing, at least this letter, sharing this information outside of the safety and security of your relationship. And if it hadn't happened like that, then this would have gone a lot differently. Now, on the same line, him defending his family against you, when I look at this, another high level value. You're here to support me and protect me. when you put me in a position where I'm the person who has no defenses and you're against me because you're on their side, that's tough. That's like, I don't know if I could get past that. I once told the story of, I was in Oregon when I was married, and we went to this food vendor, and they have food vendors all over Portland. And this food vendor had a sign, and it said, you know, $3 for a hamburger, another $2 for fries, or whatever it said. And so he gave me my meal, and this is like so inconsequential of the amount, but I'm sitting there looking at what he gave me for my change. And I go, I thought it was, you know, $6 for all of this stuff. And he goes, nope, it's whatever it was, $7, $8. And I was like, yeah, but it says right here, and I'm pointing out what I believe to be true. I'm like, it says right here, and it says here, and that adds up to $8. So my wife comes up and says, no. And she starts getting like embarrassed that I'm like holding the line up, and I'm saying, look, it just doesn't make sense to me. And I wasn't acting crazy or anything, but she's pointing at the sign going, no, look. And I still didn't understand. It didn't make sense to me. It's like, but here's what I get. And then my wife's like, oh, and she walks away. So here I am feeling defenseless by myself, unsupported, because my wife walked away. So now I feel like my wife's against me too. And so I finally said, well, I don't understand. Here's the money. And I just walked away. And I walked over to my wife and she's like, you didn't get it. I mean, look at the prices. I think she eventually was able to convince me or tell me. I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. And I said, you know, when you walked away, I felt like you were against me. I felt like you were mad at me or I just felt like I was defenseless. I forget what I said. And I told her something, you know, I need you to support me even when I'm wrong. And that was challenging. I said, I need you to be on my side. Not that I want you to support my wrongness, but I was a very vulnerable space in that moment. And for you to walk away left me so naked emotionally that I don't know what happened. It was like a fear that came over me or an anger that someone I could trust to be there, even when I'm wrong, even there to say, you know what, I still love you. I'm still here for you. I'm still next to you. Even if I disagree with you.
Yeah.
So I said that. I was like, I just need you to be there to support me, emotionally speaking, even when you know I'm wrong. And that really changed everything. I mean, that's really changed a lot about our relationship. And it made me realize that, I just learned that myself. I had to learn going through this challenge what it felt like and what I needed in that moment. And from that point on, we could disagree. And she could be right next to me, but she never left my side emotionally, if that makes sense.
That's huge.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, in this world where men are supposed to be, you know, all the machismo and we're not supposed to have any chinks in our armor. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that you had your partner stand by you, you know, it creates a sense of security and confidence. And I mean, it means a lot. It means a whole lot. And so, you know, in Mary's situation, you know, the sex is reversed, but I don't can imagine what it would feel like to feel as if not only are you at odds with in-laws and that side of the family, but you're also at odds with your husband who's on there. Yeah. Tack on there the trust violation. And there's a whole lot of stuff swirling around that kind of sounds like a powder keg type situation.
Powder keg. What do you mean?
Powder keg, meaning a one little spark and the thing could blow. It's sensitive, highly sensitive.
Oh, that's a good analogy. So, yes, absolutely. The reason I told that story is because when you're with someone who isn't there to protect you and keep the safety and security of your relationship as a priority, because I am all about, and I've said this before in other episodes, I am all about when there are problems with the in-laws, then the person who is directly related to the in-laws has to deal with the problem and be the buffer and be the protector. I know that's asking a lot, and sometimes it's not possible, but if and when possible, for example, if my family didn't like my girlfriend and she said bad things about my girlfriend, and my girlfriend heard those bad things, or they got on the phone together, the first thing I would do is call my family and say, you need to back off. If you have a problem with her, you have a problem with me. You talk to me. And I am so staunch on that. Because when my girlfriend feels threatened by my family, who I brought into her life. I'm not saying that I'm responsible for it. I'm saying that, well, I sort of am. Putting myself in a responsible role of protecting the person I love. Because who are you going to spend the rest of your life with? Your family, which you can have in your life, but who do you want to stay the closest to and keep protected and love and feel secure with for the rest of your life? It's usually the closest person, your romantic relationship, your spouse, your girlfriend, your boyfriend. It's usually that person that you end up spending the rest of your life with. You want to grow old together.
Yeah, I mean, that's the person you fall asleep next to, wake up next to. I mean, you're with them the vast majority of the time. And so, yeah.
And if you're treating family as, and this is going to sound strange, more important than the person that you sleep with every night or the person that you are really close to every night, if you're letting family get under that person's skin, then you're going to develop problems in the relationship. And you, who aren't there to buffer and protect as much as you can, it's not always possible, I understand, but as much as you can, what happens is you start diminishing in your ability to protect, and your partner's going to notice it and feel unsafe around you and your family. It just deteriorates the relationship. So that's why I'm so staunch about the person with the problem or toxic people in their family. That person really needs to step up and go, no, this is my girlfriend. This is my boyfriend. This is my spouse, my husband, my wife. This is the person that I'm going to spend the rest of my life with. And you're putting him or her down. You know, you have every right to your opinion. I'm not taking that away from you, but you have no right to interfere and invade the way you're doing and bringing this toxic element into an otherwise was fine until you put all your toxicity into this relationship. It was fine until that. Or we have problems. We don't need any more problems with you coming into that picture.
So I have a question for you, Paul, yep. As if I am Mary. So what you just said makes total sense. And, you know, I think it really applies for Mary's spouse. You know, it's like, hey, listen, right. Mary's spouse,
exactly.
You're the one who's got the toxic family and you need to step up and blah, blah, blah. So if I'm being Mary, I'm saying, hey, Paul, I can't necessarily control what my husband does, what my spouse does. I wish he would do all those things, but, you know, he's doing his thing. What can I do within the realm of the things that I can control?
Yeah, it's an extremely valid question and probably one that people are yelling to their podcast player right now. But I can't control what he does and he's not going to do it or she's not going to do it. It just won't happen. So what can I do? Well, you make it clear what's important to you, first of all. I mean, first, make it clear exactly what you want to happen. Or even you start off with the feelings, like, I feel unsafe around your family. You can even ask the question, will you please help me? I feel unsafe around them. Because the answers that you get to that question are going to be very telling.
Yes, they are. They are.
They're going to be very revealing. Well, my family is my blood, and if you have a problem with my family, you have a problem with me. Now you know where you stand.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, but yes, start off going, I feel unsafe, or I feel like, you know, they're interfering and that really bothers me and I can't feel safe. And I feel like I just want to have a nice life with you and not have toxic people in it, or however you want to state it. The reply to that is going to be telling, like I said, well, you know, okay, what if the reply is, I'll do my best. Great. Do your best. What does that mean? You don't have to grill the person at that moment. But when it happens again, you can say, you know, when somebody does something toxic to you, and you can go, well, it happened again, and I feel really unsafe around this person. Will you please, you know, do something about that? Can you keep your family away from me? These may not be the exact questions, going to depend on your situation. But again, the answers will be revealing. If you get an answer, if you get an answer of, you know, I don't know what to do. Listen to where I am with that when I role play this. I just don't know what to do. My family is very dominating and I don't know how to handle them. I mean, sometimes I just don't know what to do in a certain situation. You know, I did say something to Donnie and I did say something and, you know, he just got mad at me and he hung up on me. So where am I when I'm role playing that? I am the person who doesn't seem like is going to step up and protect. I don't seem to be that person. I'm not saying it's a good or a bad thing, but it is bad for relationships. Because, again, I might take a staunch position on this. If you don't have it in you enough to protect your relationship as you would protect your own child, you might have some issues. That might be reaching really far. But if you think of the relationship as something sacred that you want to grow and flourish and feel nourished by and just continue going along a good path, then any interference into that is, a challenge. It's not a problem until it becomes one, but it's a challenge. So in answer to your question, Matthew, being in that space, I think it's important that you assess how the person answers. If they say, I'm doing everything I can. I told my mom not to call and she still calls you. I told her not to text you and she still texts you. Then you can say, from that space, I go, wow, thank you for doing that. It sounds like you're doing the best you can because you can't control other people.
Yeah.
There's only so much you can do. I changed my number and then she looked it up and then she got it out of you one day because you accidentally slipped. And it's like, where is the vibe? The vibe is I'm doing the best I can. I'm so sorry. So I like that vibe. I'm doing the best I can, or absolutely no one's, I don't want anybody to interfere with this family. But if it's,
I don't get that vibe from Mary's spouse, unfortunately.
Just no.
from the email, it doesn't sound like that would be his response, but it'd be great.
Who knows where they are now, but it doesn't sound like
that's
what it's going to be. But yeah, so it's going to be when you get the response, when you say, this is what I feel, this worries me about our relationship, will you please do something about it? Their vibe is going to be very telling. And also, you have to come to a place of acceptance. So this is the third part of this answer, is that when you get whatever answer, whatever reply from your significant other, and they come to a place that you either are going to feel protected, or that they're really trying, honestly, or they're going to do it, no matter what, you come to that place of acceptance. And that might mean you accept that they can't protect you. And that's a hard place to come to.
Absolutely.
But if you can accept that they won't and can't protect you, and you want to stay with this person for a lot of other great reasons, that means you have to step up. That means you have to take charge. That means you have to wear the pants. And not everyone wants to do that. Not everyone can do that. If my girlfriend's family started attacking me and she didn't step in and say, hey, lay off, he's my boyfriend, I love him, and then you're causing problems in the relationship, then, and she failed to do that, I would certainly have a talk with her. But at the same time, would it be like me going, well, I can't be with this girl anymore because she's not protecting me? I think there would be a lot to lose if I said that. And I would be like, you know what? I'm going to stand up. And I would tell her, if you don't stand up, I will. I will cause rifts. I will cause them to not like me at all, because I will say, you are interfering. And if my girlfriend sides with them, that's a whole different story. If my girlfriend is not siding with the people that are against me, that's one thing. If she's siding with them, like you, Mary, and your husband, whole different story. That doesn't sound too good at all.
Yeah. I mean, I go back to the fact that you all are having conversations with a counselor. I think that's fantastic. For me, one of the things I got a lot from reading Covey's book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, particularly the habit around seeking to understand before being understood. And I'm going to, preface this by saying it can be very challenging to do. And it doesn't always work if the person that you are having a conversation with does not bring emotional maturity to the table, because they might just turn this quote unquote tactic around. But trying to understand, where is this family centeredness coming from? Because I get that a lot from what you wrote in your email, Mary, that your spouse, your husband's center currently is with his blood family, is with the people that you all are at odds with. And so for me, I'm wanting to understand, where is that coming from? Where is that coming from? Because it sounds like trying to get him to understand your feelings in the situation is not necessarily working. It doesn't necessarily sound like he's open to hearing that, or he's receptive to it. It sounds like he continues to defend them, to defend their actions, and like to what Paul was saying, not stand up for you. And so I would be wanting to understand, where is that coming from? so that I could at least be able to navigate with a bit more information, a bit more clarity. And, you know, like Paul was saying, with asking the questions and being okay with the answer, it's, you know, there's a big part of this when you seek to understand, being okay with what you might uncover and finding that place of acceptance. Because with whatever tactic you choose, seeking that information and seeking that understanding and however way you go about it, once you have the information, well, now you're equipped and you have options. You have more options. And, you know, like Paul said, it may not be easy. The quote unquote obvious path may not be easy. However, you do have, you know, you have your answer and you have the options to go ahead and make a choice. Yeah.
You know, with acceptance, that doesn't necessarily mean you accept and give in and submit to a crappier relationship for the rest of your life. It doesn't mean that. It means that you accept what is so that you can make a choice based mm-hmm. on what is mm-hmm. instead of hoping things will change someday. And I always look at trends. So what's the trend of this relationship? Does it seem to be at a steady pace where everything's pretty good and balanced? Does it seem to be rising? Like we're growing, we're healing, we're moving forward momentum, everything's going well. Or over the years, has it been slowly down, you know, like the graph in the business meeting, it goes down and down. Look at our profits going down and down and down. And you can see that line just heading down and to the right. So you look at the trend and you go, okay, is hoping things will change a waste of time? Because when that downward trend is continuing downward, it usually is a waste of time. Hoping.
Yeah.
I mean, the hoping part. Now, you can take huge steps, huge quantum leaps to try to change that downward trend and say, look, we either got to fix this or not. We're either going to fix this or we're going to crash and burn. We're going to counseling and this is how it is. But if you approach it from a, I have faith that things will change, or I hope that things will change, or I just hope that he sees the light, or maybe he'll get all my passive aggressive comments and understand where I'm really coming from, that downward trend continues. Because typically the message is not heard. It is not applied. It is not responded to. And things just don't get any better. So Mary, for you, you know, one of the things that Matthew just mentioned is the counselor. You know, the counselor is correct. He or she should have told your husband that it is his responsibility to keep the toxic people out of your family. I think that's what the counselor said. But it does involve keeping the sanctity and security of your marriage. And if he values those trying to put you down and even destroy the relationship over the marriage, because that's what it sounds like is happening, then quite honestly, you don't have a fighting chance, because now you have a whole army against you and you're that one person that's emotionally naked. So it's hard to get out of that space when you're trying to make something work when every part of it is working against you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I highly recommend that you look at what you value. I think, Matthew, you call it, what do you stand for? What are your standards?
Yeah. I use the word standards, but it's the, you know, you've said criteria, value, all of those things. I think that's great advice.
Just make a list of everything that's important to you in the relationship or in any relationship, even not this one. Just if I had the perfect relationship, what would my list look like? Must have honesty, must feel safe, must this, must that. And you put them all on a criteria. I have a workbook called Stop Self-Sabotage that helps you do this if you don't know how to do it. But basically all it is, you write down everything important to you in the area of relationships in this example, and you take the highest values or criteria and you go, if anything violates those top values, then the rest of it doesn't work. It falls apart. I think we talked about this last episode too, but this is very helpful for you to write down, to think about, that are my top level values and boundaries, are they being violated? Because if they are, then there's a problem in the relationship and now I have to make a choice. Is this something I want to keep for the rest of my life? Is this the way I want to be for the rest of my life? And is this something that if I'm here in 10 years and nothing's changed, will I still be happy? So Matthew, I know you have to go, so I'm going to wrap this up. Do you have like 1 minute while I wrap this up?
Absolutely.
Great. Just do you have any closing thoughts before I say what I'm going to say?
Yeah, Mary, My closing thought for you is it takes a lot of courage to reach out. It takes a lot of courage to go and seek out the counseling and to try to repair things and communicate with your husband and do all the things that you're doing. So, you know, whatever options and paths that you see presented in front of you, I just want you to know that you have the courage to take the action that really does resonate with your spirit and your heart, no matter how challenging it might appear, that you're going to be able to do it. You know, it sounds like you're doing really great things with listening to podcasts like Paul's and seeking out help from qualified third parties like your counselor. So continue on that path. Keep putting in that love on yourself. And, you know, you're the only person that you truly have to fall asleep with at night, and making sure that you are comfortable showing up powerfully for yourself and really honoring who you are. And that's something that I believe wholeheartedly is incredibly important. So I'm inspired by you, Mary, and I really appreciate the opportunity to you, Mary, for sharing with Paul, and for Paul for inviting me to come on and share my two cents.
Thank you, Matthew. Great closing comments there. And just like you just said about, you know, stepping into that courage and doing the things that you really need to do, that might be unpleasant. I've come to a place in my life where if I need to start protecting myself, then I really start protecting myself. If things are falling apart around me, then I have to step up and protect me as if I was a little child. It's like that protecting that inner child in you, because that's where all your fear comes from. I'm afraid, so that I'm carrying this old fear from childhood into my adult life. And you know what? The adult needs to step in and go, all right, no one's here to protect me. I don't feel safe in this situation. The person that I was supposed to rely on to protect me isn't protecting me. So now I need to do it for myself. And so Matthew said most of it. Thank you so much for joining me, Matthew. You can find him at MatthewBivens.com or his two podcast shows, Having It All and Doing It at Home. Thank you, Matthew. Appreciate
you
being
here. Thank you, Paul.
Great.
Yes, I appreciate you.
Great. Thank you, my friend, and for all your words about me and the show and how it's helped you. I'm going to close the show now. So what I'd like everyone to do is just open your mind. And with that open mind, you can step into that power that I was talking about with Mary. And this will help you be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing. Is hard, and it's also an opportunity. What's the opportunity? I see the opportunity as I am here left alone, emotionally naked, and now what am I going to do about it? Because no one else is going to step in to help me.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
there's my opportunity. I am going to step in and help me. And that's going to be hard, because if I've never done that before, or if I've always had a reliance on someone else. That was a bit of the extended version of the rest of our conversation between Matthew and I. We can't fit the whole thing on the regular podcast. So if you're interested in any more conversation on that very subject and what else ended up on the cutting room floor, consider joining the patron program at patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. You'll find the rest of this conversation and a bunch of other good stuff there too. And whether you're a patron or not, I appreciate you, and we'll talk to you again soon.